Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign with crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Details at sfarmmarketing.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments at adm.com/farmerview.
From the land of Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the November 22nd edition of Commodity Week. Well, it's been a week since the U.S. EPA announced the RFS proposal, and corn futures managed to hold pretty steady. That's not bad. And the soybeans posted a really good week. We'll talk about it and so much more today on Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Later on in this program, we'll talk with Joel Carlin of Western Milling out of Goshen, California. Our panelists today include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities from Newmarket, Indiana, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can find us online at willag.org. You'll find all of our winter meetings there as well. Just look in the Ag Outlook section over on the right-hand side of the page.
Support for agricultural programs comes from AgriGold and their newest AgriGold Giant 107-day A6408, available for 2014 in Roundup Ready and also VT Triple Pro Rib. More information on A6408, including yield and dry down data, is at agrigold.com. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
Well, gentlemen, let's start our discussion with this question. Dale Durkles, as you look back at the U.S. EPA's proposal, which was leaked, and then the proposal came out. We have a 60-day comment period to go through. The marketplace reacted, but for the week, corn futures held pretty steady. That in the face of an RFS change, in the face of a fairly large crop. Why do you think that happened?
You know, you hit the magic word there. It was leaked. You know, the RFS proposal was pretty well known at this point, and counterbalancing that as far as that particular situation is concerned is right now we're making good money grinding corn for ethanol itself. And as long as that persists, you know, I think that's really a moot point at this juncture.
Kurt Kimmel?
Well, overall, strength, I think, is coming from harvest is wrapping up. End users have been fairly well empty. They're still gathering some inventory. And everybody in the world's bearish. Even the commodity funds are, you know, still strong short on the future side equation, and we're in this time of year where seasonally the market tries to catch and see some type of strength going into year end. All the years I've been doing this, I've not had much success having a guy fill up a grain bin and turn around and empty it right away, or pay minimum storage and sell grain much before minimum storage is up. So, you know, as long as the news isn't getting more bearish in through here, I think we're in a position to make an attempt to hold together.
And Wayne Nelson.
Well, I think that low prices brought in some customers, and some customers were some great sales. I mean, basically, if we hadn't seen the sales that we saw on Thursday, I don't think corn or beans would have held in there for the week. And I think our options would have settled out a different strike price. But I think the sales are what's doing it.
December corn, by the way, this week, a 426 and three quarter high, low at 410 and three quarter, settlement price at $4.22 and a quarter. It finished a quarter of a cent higher than it did the week before on Friday. Remember, we give you the high and the low from all the sessions all week long. December of next year at $4.57 and three quarters, finished 2 cents lower. Have you been looking at the charts, and what are they telling you at this time?
The one thing I will say about December corn at this point, or nearby corn period, is that from a timing standpoint, I still have a 20-week cycle low coming in at the end of the calendar year. And you know, when I look at the performance, even though after we collapsed on Monday, we kind of held together. To me, I didn't see anything that said the trend was ready to turn around yet. So, you know, technically, I still think the bias is down.
And do you see that in the cash market at this time, Wayne? Is it weak in the basis, strong in the basis?
Oh, my gosh. It is very strong at this point in time of the year. Generally, as we end up harvest, we're seeing a wide basis because that's when everybody's full, and that's at the elevators and at home, and they know that that's a good chance to buy a lot of corn. And basically, this year, we're seeing some of the tightest basis levels we've seen in the last 20 years.
Okay, Kurt, so you're bracketed by a weak futures market and a strong cash market. That's not necessarily anything that would be strange, but it's possible.
Well, it says we're range-bound, I guess. No, you know, technically the trend is down, but short term we do have some trend divergences trying to kick things up here on the short term scale. But demand's out there. But I kind of feel we're in a trading sideways pattern for a while. It looks like this $4 is going to be support, and up towards $4.40 is going to be resistance. We could get in that good old fashioned roll down mentality once Dease goes off, the March takes over and rolls down.
You know, the one fundamental problem that I keep coming back to, and I think people in the industry keep coming back to, it's the same point. And yes, I do know we have some good basis levels for this time of year, but going into harvest, we knew farmers were 10, maybe 15% sold on the new crop. And, you know, every day we move forward to a time where they're going to have to start peeling some grain out to generate cash to start paying bills. They can't sit forever and not do that. And I think the industry itself is kind of playing a waiting game. They're nibbling at the edges, you know, buying what I need on an as-needed basis, very short term, for the most part, you know, with these firm cash basis levels. But I think they're really waiting to see, well, when's the farmer gonna finally give up and go, I got to sell something, I need the money. And I think that's a big deal, because normally this time of year, they're probably 35-40% sold on a crop. They're way behind.
So farmers have been fairly cash flush. Do you suppose they can maintain that stance through the end of the year at this point and not make sales? Or will they have to open up at some point?
You know, I think they could through the end of the year, but I think what's going to happen if they're going to do it through the end of the year, we're probably going to see the other one you're going to ask about later be the one that gets sold, and that's beans.
I think we can hold together till year end, but after the first year, I think they're going to let loose and be some sellers. But my more concern after the first of the year is investor confidence, consumer confidence. What's going on in Washington is not positive at all, and it probably is a sign that we could see some fallout down the road here if we don't get our house in order in Washington.
I think the farmers can go through the end of the year with no problem. There's going to be some shrewd marketers are going to sell some basis contracts in here as long as they're paying up good and whatever along the way. And they're going to want to hold longer than that. They're going to be stubborn. What's going to make some of this corn move is a lot of it was put in bins without drying it, and it was wetter this year than normal. And I think we're going to have some conditioning problems. They're going to say we're going to move some corn in February and March.
So we have lead option at 422 and a quarter on this week. When I talked to you on Tuesday during the closing market report, Wayne, we talked about a $3 bill and whether that would show up sometime. And you said, well, it's only 20 cents away. It remains just 20 cents away. But I have seen numbers as low as $2.75 for corn. That seems awfully bearish to me. Are those numbers somewhere in play?
Well, we saw them too, but that was a few years back. But we don't want to talk about going that low. And there are some bears that are that negative and whatever, but it's going to take a black swan of some sort to hit the market to take us that low, because at those prices and at the inflation rate we're at, that is really, really cheap grain. And the world's going to have some use for cheap grain that cheap. I mean, the ethanol is going to sell like the dickens at that price.
You know, if you go under a $4 bill, and what he's talking about, we've got to remember at this point, there is still another alternative the producer has access to. Not something he doesn't necessarily like, but doesn't cost him a lot of money, and that's commodity loan. You know, and that's going to pay you roughly a $2 bill, you know. And so if I need to generate cash, if I get down to where I think it's too cheap, then I always have the option going in and taking the loan out on some corn to be able to hang on to that short term, too. So, you know, he's got a lot of other options. I think we all have to remember that.
Is December corn of 2014 at 457 and three quarters, which held pretty strong, just down 2 cents, a potential sale yet for next year?
Actually, when I look at that price there, I think at this point, to me, it's as much as anything not a timing issue as much as a price issue. I think we'll be able to do that, and I still believe somewhere between now and let's say the end of March, we'll probably have a 475 or maybe even a little bit better than that to sell. So I'm in no reason or no rush to sell weakness yet.
I think you'd be patient here to try to get some higher prices to sell. But in the meantime, I would say you probably need 100% put coverage under you in case things do fall apart. I'm just not comfortable after the first year. I'm just not comfortable with what's going on in the world. I don't want to wake up some morning here and see that 275 for some unknown reason somewhere.
Well, Todd, we looked at a strategy this week where we were buying 460 puts, selling $5 calls, and also maybe some 480 puts selling also along the way. We were also looking at when we sold those $5 calls. If you've got corn in the bin and lots of corn out there, $5 is up 45 cents from where we're at in the July. And I can hold corn for 55 cents if it actually goes up there to get filled on them. If not, it pays for that 460 put to let me hold things.
This week, the December wheat had a top at 634 and three quarters, or rather 654 and three quarters. Its bottom at 641 and a half. Settlement price there was at 649 and a half, up a nickel on the week. July of next year at 659 for the soft red, up 3 1/4 cents. January soybeans, 1322 was the top on the week. The bottom at $12.68 and a quarter. It finished with an outside up week at $13.19 and a half. That was 39 cents higher than last week. And November at $11.67, up 13 and a half cents. December bean meal, $427.80, a gain of $17.30. December bean oil at $41.16, up 69 cents. It, too, posted an outside up week.
You know, the one thing when you look at the bean complex, especially Thursday and really into Friday, that not a lot of people talked about or thought about, there was a lot of talk through the whole last week about expiration of December puts on December corn. Everybody forgot we have that same situation on December bean meal. And really, when you look at some of the open interest numbers on puts and calls in December bean meal, you know, we went back to some possible targets in there. So I kind of wonder, you know, when the bean meal really was unusually strong, especially when we didn't have anything to really guide it, was it this option expiration that really gassed the market on Friday?
So you're just thinking it was arbitrary and it won't come back next week?
It wasn't necessarily totally arbitrary because in beans we did have the good sales on the export sales report Thursday. We had China buying some beans early Friday morning. So there was a fundamental argument, but that kind of move into bean meal without much, you know, you really kind of wonder.
It was a good week for soybeans. January up 39 cents.
Yeah, I held in there. I believe the producer probably sold all the beans and hung onto the corn is probably the best explanation. But, yeah, the bean charts got head and shoulders bottom in place and through here. It's to take out the neckline, it could generate some more technical buying. But why beans want to move higher is kind of questionable to us, especially as South America comes online, be fairly good shape so far.
Any good fundamental reasons for the beans to rally?
Well, our bean sales are 90% of what we projected they'd be, Todd. We've had tremendous shipments, which means once we've shifted, it's hard to cancel those sales, and that's really good. The bad part is that China's bought 2 out of every 3 bushels we've sold up to this point in time. The rest of the world has bought 1/3 of what we've sold. But, I mean, basically, the export numbers were tremendous. The crush is good. We're making money on it. And we have processors fighting exporters for the beans right now.
You know, the one thing regarding China we all have to be careful about, if we go back into the summer months, their imports were running 6.5-7 million ton a month. And basically, most of those were coming out of South America, and they really had a chance to rebuild some of their working stocks at that particular point in time. You know, you're looking back right now to talking about 6 million, 6.5 million ton imports here a couple of months in a row, unusually large at a time when they typically aren't that large. And so you kind of wonder if China isn't building some inventories to play against the possibility, which they ran into last January, of Brazil's harvest getting off the market a little slow, and they had to come in and kind of fight for some beans and pay up when they didn't want to. So are they in a game of inventory building? And if they are, and nothing happens in South America, we have to worry that all of a sudden it just ends.
It just ends. And how far
down? Their bean business just ends.
I know.
And what do you mean?
How much of a loss will we take if that happens?
If South America looks good, $3 from here.
$3 down. But doesn't bean oil, vegetable oil, biodiesel manage to hold the marketplace somewhere?
Your big driver, your bean complex, though, is always meal. it's the one that gives you your huge markets, not so much the oil. And right now with the RFS game, you got a lot of people really questioning, you know, how good is the biodiesel game going to be?
Yeah, we've seen the spread narrow back up in through here on anticipation this being manned might move a little longer here. But as we move down the road, you're going to see that spread widening out as we start to see this demand shift to the southern hemisphere.
Southern hemisphere demand, of course, they have to have the crop up, running. They have to have it actually raised and harvested in order for that to happen. How far along are they, and how are they doing at this point?
They're getting along really well. They have some dry areas. They got some wet areas. Oh, that happens every year. You know, along the way, we are looking at 90 cents less for beans sourced out of South America later on, as we look at things here when they are available for that. But I think you hit the nail on the head when you said, when will they be available? And they want to bridge that gap ahead of time, not behind time.
I'd just like to throw one number out, and I do this all the time when I get a chance. When you look at the major countries in South America, if they have decent weather, Brazil, Argentina, Paraguay, Uruguay, and Bolivia, we're talking about a 6 billion bushel bean crop. And that's a number people need to remember.
You're listening to Commodity Week. Our panelists in studio include Dale Durkles of AgriVisor, Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, and Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities. Our panelist and guest will return. The guest, Joe Carlin of Western Milling out of Goshen, California.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. So far, November is on the cool side, about a degree below average. Precipitation is close to average in most of the state. The significant weather event of the year occurred on Sunday when Illinois, Indiana, Kentucky, and Ohio experienced a tornado outbreak. About 24 tornadoes have been identified through Illinois, with 6 people killed. The strongest of these was an EF4 that struck Washington, Illinois. While November tornadoes are not that unusual, on average we get about one per year, what is unusual is the number and strength of those on Sunday. According to the National Weather Service, we will see much below average temperatures this weekend. Highs on Saturday will range from the mid-20s in northern Illinois to the low 30s in southern Illinois. Overnight lows will drop into the single digits in northern Illinois and in the teens in central and southern Illinois. Temperatures will warm slightly through Thursday with highs in the 30s and 40s and lows in the 20s. Precipitation is not expected through Thursday, so it looks like Thanksgiving Day will be cold and dry. The pattern of colder and drier conditions is expected to continue through at least December 5th. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, their FarmerView mobile site features up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids, and offers ADM customers access to contracts, deliveries, and payments. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
This is the November 22nd edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists are Dale Durkles, Kurt Kimmel, and Wayne Nelson. And on the phone line from Goshen, California, from Western Milling, is Joel Carlin this afternoon. Good afternoon to you, Joel. Thanks for taking the time with us. You know what I want to know from you up front is how quickly it is that a crop of this size actually begins to fill the bins in California. How long did it take?
Well, to fill our bins, It take a little while, but we probably didn't get our first corn train probably till the end of October. So even though the new crop marketing year starts at the beginning of October, we still had a fairly good premium. I think that the lower new crop prices really didn't start filtering out really until, as I said, the last week of October.
Joel, in this environment and purchasing corn in particular at this point, how are you setting up your strategy looking forward? Are you starting to accumulate stuff and starting to be rather aggressive about it? Are you playing a game waiting to see if this farmer is going to finally break loose and sell some corn and see if it gives some pressure? How are you setting up your purchase strategies?
Well, I think this is what we're doing. I think that, you know, a lot of people really on a hand-to-mouth have sort of advised that. But then, you know, heading into the November 8th report, the market was starting to move sideways. Cash basis is pretty strong. December futures showed no inclination to break below $4. So we got all of our customers really covered for, you know, the month of November, December, and the first half of January. I think if this thing plays out, what we're looking to do is maybe buy another dip after the first of the year. You gentlemen have mentioned you could have some basis weakness as farmers start to market some of their corn. You also have a number of reports coming out on January 11th. I think that you could have a slight increase in the crop size. I think you could have perhaps not as bullish demand numbers furnished by WASDE as you saw in November. And you also have a quarterly stocks report that could show quite a bit less corn feed use than expected. So I think, you know, I'm looking for some bearish numbers, and I think, you know, if that's the case, I think we'll probably use that dip to cover our January, February, and March. And then thereafter, and maybe best, as I said, if South American crop looks good and U.S. acreage is still around 92 million and subsoil moisture reserves, it may not be the worst idea to go hand to mouth from April all the way into new crop of next year.
Joel, what's your idea on why meal futures were so strong this week?
On meal futures?
Yeah.
I think that, well, you have, we obviously have a very strong, you know, export program. Apparently, there was a sizable amount of Chinese meal purchases going out all through, as I said, next year. You have extraordinarily good margins in the meal-intensive consuming sectors, the poultry, the swine, and then, you know, we all mentioned the very brisk pace of soybean sales. Soy meal sales are the same way.
Well, everybody talks about that the one thing that can pump this market or the white swan coming along would be bad weather in South America. What do you think the next black swan could be?
I think that, you know, obviously, as I said, the black swan, I mean, South American weather has been so good so far that, you know, logically it says it could only get worse. I think that, you know, the black swan, you know, possible couple of black swans would be the renewed budget fights. After the first of the year, when we have to go through the budget and the resolution, though I'm not sure if, the Democrats seem to be reeling now with this Obamacare. So they have the advantages in their favor. They may want to press that. So I think it's either a, you know, renewed budgetary squabbles in Washington that really upsets the financial markets or, you know, deterioration in South American weather.
You mentioned that the December 1 grain stocks report might show a lower feed usage than many had expected. Why would that be, and what kind of number are you working with?
Well, my number is actually 5 billion as opposed to 5.2. I mean, I think that, you know, there's a lot of skepticism about the USDA demand projection, which aggregate is up about 17% of the year, and I think that's the second highest since 1975. You're looking at a very large increase in projected feed demand. And I'm just not sure whether the lower grain-consuming animal units, particularly in the more corn-intensive ruminant sector, the dairy and beef cattle, justify that. You're still having a tremendous amount of byproducts fed. And I think that livestock, dairy, and livestock, dairy, and poultry producers become a lot more savvy about feeding. I think they become a lot more efficient in this high-priced grain era. So I'm not. That's one area, the high feed demand, that I'm really questioning.
I'll come back with another question here that kind of goes into that. Chris Hurd at Purdue University put out a missive here about a week and a half ago, and he was specifically looking at the hog industry and said, you know, right now, if you're putting corn through the hog, you're selling corn at the equivalent of $7 a bushel, you know, and we could talk about something in poultry that would not be maybe as attractive, but still be attractive. Mm-hmm. Do you think the livestock operations are going to be that careful about expansion at this point that we really don't see an expanded base going forward?
Well, I mean, I think that, the birds are obviously expanding, you know, a fair brisk, 3-4%. I think that the swine people, they're keeping it about, steady 1%. you know, the real increase recently has come in increased pigs per litters, and that's offsetting some of the death because of that disease. But, you know, as far as the, you know, as far as the, you know, as I said, you know, as far as the, you know, the ruminant sector, I, you know, it's, you know, cattle placements are still pretty low, and they just started to maybe hold back some heifers. So I just, you know, I think they are going to be, you know, relatively careful, as I said, going forward. Because keep in mind, even though, you know, energy costs, corn is relatively cheap, particularly out here on the West Coast, our protein values, whether it's canola meal, soybean meal, or distillers, are still very, very high.
Joel, do you, on feed demand, do you break it down to true feed demand or just feed demand in general?
Well, I think, you know, I think that, you know, you break it down to sector and see exactly, as I said, you know, what they, as I said, what they feed. But obviously, as I take a look at the numbers, you know, I break it down according to species and, you know, grain consuming animal units and high protein consuming animal units. And I think one of the reasons that the, you know, the proteins have done better than the corn is that, those sectors, the heavy consuming, high protein meal consuming sectors are doing better financially.
You said you'd want to go after March hand to mouth on that. How cheap do you think corn can get?
Well, I mean, I think July, you know, right now, you know, around 437, I think that has a chance to drop to 350. I mean, I think that there are a number of bearish scenarios, I think, out there for corn. The fact, as you've all mentioned, farmers, you know, the farmers are the biggest longs around, and they haven't sold anything. And I think after the first of the year, they will have to sell, but it's a big mindset adjustment. They've enjoyed extraordinarily prices for the past few years, and it's very difficult for them to sell. But if we have a decent South American crop, U.S. corn acreage does not contract that much. We do find out that the, perhaps the November USDA WASDE corn demand estimate may be the most bullish of the year. Current prices now may look quite a bit better, you know, than a few months from now.
So that would be for July. What about for the dip you expect to come in and buy in Jan, February?
You know, I think at that point we could probably, I think if we have a negative report, I'd be looking for, and I do think that the market's probably going to essentially track sideways, but I think that if we're able to, as I say, get this, you know, July corn right now, I mean, you could, as I said, you get this thing down, you know, anywheres from 410 to 420, that would probably be a decent dip to buy.
You know, looking forward, we've talked a lot about corn here in terms of price. What's your perceptions about soybeans and or protein going forward? What kind of path do you think that's going to take?
I think they're going to hold in a little bit longer. I think that the British U.S. export program, the very attractive crush margins, still a little uncertainty as to how the South American crop is going to do. It's probably going to support these markets probably until the, you know, the March-April time frame. But at that point, you know, we'll have a much better idea about the South American crop. And even though the USDA is looking at an 11 million ton increase combined Brazil and Argentine production, it could be quite a bit higher than that. And then, you know, you contemplate the possibilities on the ending stocks next year if you start penciling 2014 U.S. corn acreage anywhere from 80 to perhaps 83 million, you can actually, you know, you can build a fairly, you know, bearish case, particularly if you think that bean ending stocks may increase to 300 million or more.
Joel, thank you so much for taking the time with us today.
Thank you, Todd.
Joel Carlin is with Western Milling. He's in Goshen, California. Now time for a final word from our analyst in the studio. We'll start with you, Dale Durkles of AgriVisor.
This goes with something Kurt said at the top of the hour, worried about things economic. We've got some cyclic lows due in commodity indices right after first of the year, and they're real right on top of key support levels right now.
Kurt Kimmel?
Next week's Thanksgiving, and us being involved in agriculture, I think we have a lot to be thankful for this year. Hope everybody has a safe, enjoyable holiday.
And Wayne Nelson.
Well, is it going to be the Bears or the Bulls that eat turkey at Thanksgiving?
We'll find out as we make our way through Thanksgiving next week and the holiday schedule. Thanks so much for being with us. This has been the November 22nd edition of Commodity Week. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.